Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have our friend Kristen with us today. Hello, Kristen.
Hi.
We have her and her little baby as well. So if you hear those little cute coos in the background, you can just smile. I love when we have little babies on the podcast or kids. The other day we had like a little toddler and it was so fun. It just makes my heart so happy. How old is your little baby now?
She is almost, she's over a month, right over a month.
Just a little. And this is a VBAC baby.
Yes, she is.
Yes. Okay, so we were just talking before we got recording. So Kristen had a C-section and then a VBAC, and she did, with that VBAC, she had preeclampsia. We're going to talk a little bit more of like what that looked like, but that's definitely been one of the things that our listeners are asking about. Like, is VBAC possible with, you know, labbed positive preeclampsia? And the answer is yes, it is. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then she has a surprise. So we are going to read a review and then we are going to dive into her stories. This review was left in March of 2023 by MC Grace. And it says, must listen for every mom. Says this podcast is a must listen, not just for the mom preparing for a VBAC, but for anyone who gives birth and has given birth. Our plans to give birth in the U.S., Megan wonderfully walks through personal stories while prepping for helpful advocacy tips and solid dose of empowerment in each episode. If you want to hear people discussing their plan to VBAC, if you're curious about what giving birth looks like in the U.S. is like, and if you are wanting to have tips on how to mentally, emotionally, and physically prepare yourself for the best birth, this is the podcast to listen to. I love that. Thank you so much. And I agree. Like, this is such a great place for everybody, anyone preparing for birth to listen. I think, you know, with crazy high cesarean rates, we've talked about this before, we have to learn about why they're happening. And this podcast, I mean, literally shares a lot of why cesareans are happening. So it is such a great podcast for anyone, including first-time moms or even fifth-time moms that haven't had a cesarean. As always, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a review, you can head over to Apple Podcasts or Google or Spotify or wherever you're listening and drop us a review, or you could even email us at info@thevbacklink.com.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents.
However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. Okay, Kristen, welcome. Welcome, welcome, and thank you for booking this. We were so excited that you were willing to come on.
I was so excited to be here. I've heard so many stories and been encouraged by so much, so it's so awesome to share mine.
Yes. Well, I'd love to turn the time over to you.
Okay, so I got pregnant pretty young. I was 20 at the time, and I was in college, so got pregnant. He was a little bit of a surprise, and so it was a little bit of a crazy pregnancy, just moving and figuring all that out. But I got to move home to my big crazy family, so I had a lot of support. I had a really normal pregnancy. I was pretty young, and a lot of my sisters had babies, so I felt like I knew a little bit about birth, and I really didn't put any effort into looking any deeper into it. I felt like my mom had six kids naturally, and I just thought, okay, this is just what we do. So I had a midwife, I had a super normal pregnancy, and then I got to the end and I was very done being pregnant, and I was just ready to meet my little baby and have my baby. So I was offered a 41 week induction. I think it was just offered to me, and I was like, meet my baby on Friday. Sounds great. That's what we'll do. Yeah. So I didn't think anything of it. My mom had all her babies naturally, and she did seem a little weary to me, but I just was thinking, I am huge. I get you're weary, but I want to do this. I want to meet my baby. Mm-hmm. So I had a fully placed the night before my induction date. So I had the fully placed, and I was going to go home. And when she placed the Foley, she told me, I can't remember exactly when they fall out, but I was only a centimeter below. I think I was like 3 centimeters. So she was like, oh, wow, you really stretched when I put this in. I might see you before your induction. So I was like, great. Sweet. So I went home, and then she did it. We got there in the morning, and I wasn't feeling anything. And I was induced, and it was just kind of the natural cascade of things. I think I got Pitocin, and then I had GBS, so I had to get the antibiotics, but I thought I was allergic to them because I'd had a reaction when I was a kid, so they had to give me something else. I don't know whatever else antibiotic they had to give me, but it was something different, and it made me feel super, super sick. So I just wanted to lay in bed. I was like, I feel sick and I don't want to stand up. I'm in labor and I don't feel good. So I just laid there pretty much. And then I got an epidural and I got to a 10. I pushed for 3 hours, but his head never came, and he was having some D-cells. So all of a sudden I just heard the word C-section and I was so shocked. It didn't come into my brain at all before they said it. And I don't know why. It was a long day. I had started at like 5 a.m. And by the end of my pushing, it was like 12 a.m. or p.m. So, and I didn't think of a C-section before that. And then
I think a lot of us don't, right? Like, it's not really something that we plan for or even think about.
Yes. And so it's really jarring when you hear it. And so then we had to go down for the emergency C-section because I had when my water had broken, there was meconium, and he was decelling quite a bit all day. So we went in for my C-section, and I was pretty scared. My husband was really scared, and we just went in, and I was super shaky and I was terrified. I don't do well with that kind of stuff. So I say the worst part of giving away birth is the IVs. So I was super nervous, and then they needed to get him out. And so they told me, like, you have to try to calm down and try to stop shaking so much, because they needed to get to me. And I don't remember exactly what happened. I just remember laying there, and the anesthesiologist was like, she needs to calm down. Do you want me to give her something? And I just remember looking up at the who was doing my C-section, who was somebody completely new, because my midwife couldn't do it. And they just, I remember them shaking their head. And right after that, he must have put something in to try to calm me down. But I calmed down, but I just, all of a sudden, I felt like I couldn't talk. I couldn't speak. Like, I was just laying there and I was so scared. And so I felt my son being pulled out. Like, I felt them kind of wiggling him out of my body. And then I didn't hear him cry. And I just remember looking at my husband, and I was like mad at him almost for, I was like, he's out and he's not crying. I can't say anything. I need you to say something. And he didn't know he was out, but I felt like he should know he was out. And I was, and so then my son had to go to the NICU because he aspirated meconium. So I just remember them lifting him up and showing me, the NICU nurses showing me them over the drape as they were kind of running out. And they were like, here, mama, and showed me him. And I just remember feeling like such a bad mom, because I didn't, everybody says, like, oh, you, when you see your baby and you feel your baby, it's just this overwhelming sense of something you'll never feel again. And I didn't feel that. I felt nothing. I couldn't talk. I felt nothing. And I was so scared and just numb at that point. So my husband went with my son, and everybody had told us all day that dad gets to stay with baby if something bad were to happen. So I was just assuming, okay, at least my baby's not alone. My husband's with him. And then they started to sew me up, but I don't know exactly what happened. I just remember them saying, there's blood where there shouldn't be. And so they said something about they nicked my bladder. So they were sewing me up, and then they had to re-go back in and do something. But my poor husband at the time, there was a traveling NICU doctor that didn't know that dad's got to stay in there with babies. So he kicked my husband out of the NICU at that point. And then he said when he came out, he was in the hallway in between the OR and the NICU. And he just said, I just saw a bunch of people rushing back into your OR and rushing back in there. So he was like, and then he said, somebody just put him in there. Like, what are you doing? And he was like, I don't know. So they put him in a closet, a maintenance closet.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Yeah, so he was like, I just was in this closet thinking you guys were both not okay. And I didn't know what to do. So that was a little crazy. And then my baby was in the NICU he was in there for 2.5 weeks. That was a very long, very difficult process for us, because I just wanted my baby to be home and my baby to be healthy. And we had some really amazing nurses, and then we had some not as amazing nurses. And that is such a big, nurses are such a big thing. You know, they really change your whole day. They change everything about your hospital experience when you have a good nurse and when you have one that's just not very supportive. So that was a really difficult experience. So then when we got home, I didn't really think about another baby for a while because I was so scared. And then once I did, I just remember saying, you know what, if I go in and a doctor tells me I have to have another C-section because that's what's best for my baby, then that's okay. And I'll get through it and that'll be okay. And my baby will be healthy. And then I started doing a little research and I found the VBAC leak. And I think I binged for a full 24 hours. Like, I don't think I slept. And then after that, after 24 hours, I was like, nobody can tell me that I can't do this. I can do this. And from then on, this was a couple years before I was pregnant. I listened, I did research. I had called and met with doulas and home birth midwives and everyone before I was even pregnant, they would be like, what's your due date? And I was always like, well, I don't have one. I'm not pregnant yet. And they would always be like, okay. But it was great. And I felt a lot more prepared with my second. So I did feel like I was going in hands up a little bit. I felt like I was ready to fight what I needed mm-hmm. to fight. So I got pregnant again in she was born in 2022. So I think 2021. And I got pregnant again. It was an easy pregnancy. I mean, I was super, super sick at the beginning, but it was a pretty easy pregnancy. I started getting Braxton Hicks at 20 weeks, which was very different than my previous pregnancy. And I had them all my pregnancy, every night for all my pregnancy, which was very crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I had switched providers. So I started with a provider because I wanted to go with a different hospital initially. And when I went to this provider, he told me all about uterine rupture in the first appointment. And I had had statistics written in my phone because I knew when I went in there, he was going to scare me. And I knew I just needed to look at my statistics after to feel better. So that's kind of what happened. But he did push back a lot on things. He wanted me to get a test epidural.
But just in case.
Yes. And to be honest, the best way I handled things was, I feel like it's really difficult to talk to a provider in an appointment. I just feel like the power feels all theirs. And when they're saying things, it really does sound scary, whether or not I knew so much information and it would still sound scary. Mm-hmm. They would be saying something and I felt like I was there and my baby was decelling and I did need a C-section. And I would kind of get scared in my appointments, and then I would go home and I would do more research, and then I felt really secure in my decision. So I went back to him and I told him that I would not be getting that. And I told him, I just let him know that if it was that much of an emergency, I would be under general anesthesia either mm-hmm. way. So I didn't understand why I needed a needle in my back. And then he kind of giggled and he was like, well, you're right. And your research. So, okay.
Stop it.
Yeah.
No way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I ended up switching providers at 20 weeks after I met my doula, because I told her just a few things that I didn't feel as supported with him. And she let me know a midwife that I had never heard about. So I met with this midwife at like around 20 weeks. I gave her a very long list. Jojo, I gave her a very long list of papers to tell her exactly what I wanted. And she was very, very apt to doing everything. She would even come, she would say things before I even would talk about them. Like mm-hmm. she would, mm-hmm. I would ask her about an epidural and she would say, no, you don't need one and you need to be doing this. You need to be eating before I would ask about all these things. So I felt really secure going with her. And then at 38 weeks, I got to my appointment and I had high blood pressure and it was pretty high. And she just was like, I'm going to do a urine test for preeclampsia. And I really had never heard of I had heard of it. I just had never done any research for it. I didn't understand what it was. Mm-hmm. So I did the urine test and I really was thinking it was just going to come back fine. I felt absolutely fine. I had no symptoms. So I assumed that it was going to be okay. And then it wasn't. And she told me that I was going to need to be induced. So I was very, very nervous. I really wanted to avoid an induction because my first was induced and I felt like that was kind of leading up to my C-section. And right. So I was super nervous about a VBAC being induced, but she was very supportive with me. She really understood that I was very, very nervous and she was very respectful with that. So we ended up, being induced at 39 weeks, and I went in and I had a full labeled place, and then I just rested the rest of the night. Well, you don't sleep in the hospital, but I pretend rested for the rest of the night. And then in the morning, I got up and they were like, yeah, you seem to be progressing. So they started me on a low dose of Pitocin, and I just told them I wanted really low and slow. So we did that. I had had quite a bit of Braxton Hicks or epidermal labor. I don't exactly know which, Mavi, no, not really, okay. Yeah. So I had had quite a bit of that beforehand. So I was at like a 5 and pretty actively contracting. And they were like, honey, you don't feel anything. And I was like, no, I feel something. I feel what I feel at home all the time. So I was like, I would not be coming different. Yeah, this is very, so I got pretty discouraged because I felt like nothing was happening. It was like 2 or 3 p.m. the next day. So I had been in the hospital for like 20 hours at that point. And I just felt really discouraged because I felt like nothing was happening. And I kind of emotionally broke down to my husband and told him, like, what if we do this and everything happens the same? You know, what if I've worked this hard and I fought this hard for this, and I'm just going to go in and I'm going to have another C-section. And I knew that having another emergency C-section is going to be worse for this baby than if I were to just have a regular C-section. And I was so upset. So I had my emotional breakdown. And then after that, I kept going and I was doing everything. When they put me in that room before the nurses came in to even meet me, I was doing spinning babies. I was doing everything I possibly could to get this baby out. And the nurses would even comment and say, like, wow, you just don't stop moving, do you? And I just felt like a little geriatric patient with my little, all my tubes attached to me. And I was just walking around. But yeah, so then at that point, things started to progress a tiny bit, but I mean, I was progressing, but nothing a ton was happening. So my midwife came in and let me know that the only other thing she could do aside from Pitocin, what, baby? Go help her. I'm sorry.
You're just fine.
Watch your show? Do you want to watch your show? Can you go be a helper, please? Maddie, can you be a helper? Okay, can you be a helper? Sorry. But yes, so then she told me the last thing she could do was break my water. And I was really in my head at this point in labor. I felt like I really needed to advocate for myself. My doula was helping me, texting me the whole time, telling me what I could do. And she just let me know that once things really progressed, then she would come in. So I, at that point, was just really trying to play the risk of what Pitocin I wanted. Did I want to stay low and slow, but I just didn't want my cervix to tire out. So I would let them push it up a little bit more. And I was just really in my head about trying to make the best decision, which is silly because I couldn't have controlled everything, but I felt like I needed to get my VVAC. So then things kept progressing. And at like 10 o'clock, they told me they were going to break my water, or they asked me to break my water because that was the next step. And felt like I'd been on Pitocin all day. So I was a little bit worried about my like cervix getting tired. So I told them I was fine with that. And the contraction after they broke my water, I was like, oh my goodness, here's the pain that everyone talks about.
And I feel it. I feel it.
Yes, I was like, oh my goodness. So then I felt like I was actually really in labor. And so my doula came in at that point. She was doing some rebozo work on me and shaking apples. Yes, that was great. And then she brought out the TENS unit, which was amazing. Oh my goodness. It helped me so much. They put it on my back and it just was amazing. And then I was standing up, just kind of moving my hips, and I had the TENS unit on and I was really working through things. And I started to feel like I was going to throw up, and I started to get hot and cold. And in the middle of, I would have a contraction, and in the middle of a break for a second, I looked at her and I was like, I had told her in the middle of the contraction, I think I'm going to throw up. And then I looked at her after and I was like, I think I'm going to throw up. I was so excited because I was like, okay, I think, yes. I was like, I think I might be in or nearing transition at this point. And I had had amazing nurses the whole process. I just had amazing nurses. I had asked for nurses the whole time that agreed with hypnobirthing or that were trained in hypnobirthing. I was not hypnobirthing. I had not done that, but I just wanted them that were a little more holistic and a little more natural. So one of my nurses actually said, you're not doing hypnobirthing. And I said, I know. And she said, and she was like, you just want somebody that's going to let you do what you want, huh? And I said, yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. And she was like, okay. She was like, I have the perfect nurse for you or something the next time. And I had amazing nurses the whole time. Oh, they were so encouraging, but my nurse must have been doing something. So another nurse came in to check me at this point, and she was not as nice and amazing. And so she told me she needed to check me, and I was about to get on the bed, and I had another contraction. So I stopped right outside the bed and just put my hands on there. And she told me, get on the bed. I need to check you. And I couldn't speak because I was in a contraction, but I was thinking, oh my goodness. And so then I finally ended up getting on the bed, and she looked at me and told me I was a six. And in my head, I was not a six. So I was very, the whole room changed for me at that moment. I was very discouraged. Mm-hmm. And as she said I was a six, my doula's face was right behind her, shaking her head no. She just was looking at me, shaking her head, and she was like, no, you are not. But I don't know why she just, I was exhausted, and I just broke like mentally in that moment. When she told me I was a six, I just heard, I can't do it. I can't do this. This is too much. I can't believe I'm at a six, because at that point when I got into bed, I felt pushy. I felt really pushy. Like during my contraction, I was bearing down a little bit, and I just thought, okay, if I'm pushing at a six, baby's in a bad position. And I just was so nervous. So I got right up and I went into the bathroom. My doula actually told me, you need to get up. We're going to the bathroom. And so she took me in the bathroom just alone, her and I. And she looked at me and she said, do you think you're a six? And I said, and I was crying at this point. And I was like, no, I didn't. I don't think I am. And she was like, I do not think you are a six at all. And she said, I think you know where you are. And I was like, I know, but what if I really am? If she says I am, I am. And like, I broke emotionally, and I just was like, I'm so tired. I was so tired. I hadn't slept in like 24 hours at that point. And I was just so exhausted and upset. And I told her I want an epidural, and she knew that that was not my plan. So she really tried to encourage me against it and tried to tell me I was just doing such a good job. And I couldn't hear it at that point. All I heard was the doubt. And so I just told her, no, I want an epidural. And so at that point she shifted gears and was like, okay, then we're getting an epidural, and this is going to be great, and you're going to get some rest. And so I was a little discouraged, but I ended up getting the epidural at like, I think it was like 3 a.m. at this point. And I got the epidural, and I actually got like an hour of rest, which was really amazing because I was exhausted. But when they had given me the epidural, they checked me at some point after this, and I was a nine, so, or a nine and a half. So she had looked at me and kind of given me like an eye, like, yes, you were not a six. But then it was nice. I got an hour of rest, and then they came in and told me that I was ready. This sweet, sweet nurse came in and told me that I was ready to start practice pushing or something like that. So I was like, okay, so the pushing part, I was a little nervous about, just because I pushed with my son for so long and his head never showed. So I was like, once we get past a head, I will be there. So I pushed in like one position on my side. And then she looked at me, the nurse, and she was like, you know, we're going to try tug of war. And so she put the squat bar up, and I did a tug of war push. And right when I did that, her eyes got big, and she ran over and got on the phone, and I just remember her saying something like, when she pushes in some position, I see something about baby's head. I just remember her saying baby's head, and I in the bed was like, you see baby's head? And I was so excited. Yeah. I was like, you see baby's head? And then it was, so I pushed for like a little less than an hour, and she was there, and it was, oh, everything went away for me at that point. I was just so happy and excited, and it was the best feeling in the world. I just felt like all my work, I actually did it, you know, I did it. And so, but I forgot to mention, so my midwife got off shift during this. So another OB was on, and she came in. They actually were asking me to stop pushing to wait for her to come in. And I kind of giggled. I was not going to do that, but she was not as kind and helpful. She let me know right after, despite knowing my birth plan, that delayed cord clamping wasn't safe. And yeah, and that I needed to cut the cord. And to be honest, I was in complete baby land at that point. I was so happy that my baby was there that I didn't fight it, which looking back, I'm honestly glad that I didn't, because I know it would have taken me out of where I was able to be, the joy that I was in. So I didn't fight it. I just let her do it, and it was silly, but it was okay. And then I got to just have my sweet baby, and it was amazing postpartum experience. I remember even being wheeled out with her because I didn't get my little boy after my C-section. So I remember being wheeled out with her, and I was just holding her in my arms, and I was so happy she was in my arms. And I looked at a janitor while I was being wheeled to mother and baby, and I just lifted her up and like smiled so big at him, and he just was like, okay.
Congratulations.
I was just so happy. But yeah, so that was my second MIV rack, which was amazing. And then when my little girl was like 6 months, I got pregnant again, and it was an amazing pregnancy. I felt great the whole time. I totally thought she was a boy because I wasn't sick, but she was a girl, which I was super surprised. I had no Braxton Hicks. Like, I really didn't have a ton until the end, which was crazy to me because I had had them so much with my previous, but
yeah, a lot.
yes. So that was pretty crazy, but I went back to my provider that I had gone to with my second baby, and I went back to her. Things felt a little different with her. She was still really supportive, but it just felt a little different. And then at like 16, 17 weeks in my pregnancy, I did an initial test for preeclampsia, and my numbers were already above my protein and my urine were already above where they needed to be. So she just told me in an appointment very casually, but I was super nervous. I didn't know a ton. And also in this pregnancy, I did a ton of research before about preeclampsia. So the one thing I did to my diet was I ate so much protein. I tracked, especially in that first trimester, I tried to eat 100 grams or more a day. Like, I really, really focused in that first trimester. And that was the only thing I kind of felt like I could do. So that's what I did. And she told me my protein was already really high, which I just didn't understand. And it made me really nervous. And I'd asked a little questions in the appointment, but I felt like I had a ton of questions after. And so I called, and I felt very dismissed. I felt like she just kept trying to tell me, like, don't get in your head, everything will be okay. And it was real. She was being very sweet, but I just felt like I needed a doctor at that point. I didn't need a friend. I needed her to give me information instead of trying to encourage me. It was really sweet, but we only had 5 minutes to talk, and I didn't want the encouragement. I needed information that I just felt like I wasn't being given. So I actually ended up switching again to another OB. Well, I just was interviewing them. So I actually had appointments with my midwife and an OB, and he came back into town. So I'd heard really good things about him, but he moved and then he came back. So I interviewed him initially, and actually I left my appointment And I kind of drilled him a little bit. Like, I really asked him a lot of questions. And I left my appointment and I called my sister and I said, BS, I don't believe it. I just said, he said everything I wanted to hear. And I just, that feels too bait and switchy to me. I was like, there's no way he's this, there's no way he's this good. And then I'd had a few friends through church that he was with, and he followed through on everything. And my doula told me,
really?
Yeah, I think he's just that good. And I was super surprised because I could not believe that he was that receptive of me. But I went to another appointment and talked about my initial labs with him. And he sat there with me for a whole hour and explained what he knew about preeclampsia and explained what he could to me. And it was really, really helpful, and I felt very heard. So in that moment, I chose to go with him. So I finished with him through the rest of my pregnancy. My sister actually was pregnant too, and she was going with him, so it was
no fun.
Really cool. Yeah, and then she actually had her baby. I got to be there with her through some of her birth, and then she was due like a month and a half before I was due. So I got to be there with her and watch her amazing birth. And then she told me, I have a lot of pressure. Can you just look down there? And she was crowning. And I was like, oh, you got to go to the hospital.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So she went to the hospital, but we had that amazing experience. And that was her first VBAC. So it was really awesome. And then my provider called me and told me that they were shutting down their office when I was 39 weeks pregnant. So this was at like 36 or 35 or 36 weeks. So I was then scrambling to find another provider. It was very, very difficult. Everyone I talked to just told me that they didn't take VVACs past 35 weeks, and that I even would have my paperwork switched. And then they were like, oh, you're a VVAC in preeclampsia, we won't take you. So there was like 3 weeks of me just honestly trying to find a provider that would take me, not just like even not even a supportive provider, just having a doctor to take me was very difficult. And so I finally found a provider that would take me, but they told me there was another provider in office that was very unsupportive. He actually was there during my sister's birth when she came in and was totally crowning. And he sat back with his arms and legs crossed, and she was crowning, hopping on the bed ready to push. And he sat there with his arms and legs crossed and told her how unsafe VVACs were. And
oh,
that,
my gosh. Yeah,
he told her he didn't know who approved her chart, but this was not okay. And then thank goodness the provider that was amazing came in and saved the day. But he was awful, and he was actually one of the three providers in this office that would take me. So I was really nervous about the on-call schedule and if he was going to end up being on call when I was going into labor. So I ended up, there was a lot of back and forth there, but I ended up meeting with this provider, and I met with him when I was 40 weeks in a day. So I met with him the day after my due date, and this was our first time meeting. I gave him my birth plan. He looked at how far I was, and he was like, oh, awesome, you're almost done. And like, I felt like I was he was like, perfect, let's just get you out of here, you know? And he was doing it as a favor to the other provider. And I felt like a check in his box from the start of being there. And I was really nervous about my blood pressure. I kept telling everyone I had no symptoms of my previous preeclampsia. I had no symptoms, and all my labs were positive. So I just want to be really on it. I didn't have a provider for 2 weeks and at the end of my pregnancy. So I just got a blood pressure cuff and I monitored myself as much as I could. And it was kind of stressful. And I ended up going into triage once because my blood pressure was high and I didn't have anyone to call. I didn't know what to do. So I went into triage and they just were nobody was very awesome with me, but that was okay. And my blood pressure was fine. So I ended up getting to go home. And then I was with my provider. He really wanted to induce me. He told me all about my placenta dying at 41 weeks. And he was so scared about me going past 41 weeks. And I asked him if this was just something he did with just his VWAC patients. And he said, no, I do this with everyone. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, perfect. I told him, perfect. I'm even less worried now. If I was thinking you had more information about VWAC in my placenta, so I'm less worried
concerned
now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I said, I don't want to get induced at 41 weeks. And he kept telling me, oh, I know, you do your research. You do your research, because he did not like that I was very informed. So I ended up having to go into triage at the end of my pregnancy, like 3 separate times because of my blood pressure readings at home. But every time I went to triage, they were fine there. So I kept telling people, I don't know what my blood pressure reading is doing at home, but is there something else I can do? And everyone would look at my blood pressure cuff and say, yeah, that's great. That's the one I recommend. And I was like, well, why is my blood pressure so high? I need some help. I was like, this has to not be working. At one point I brought my blood pressure cuff in with me and they were reading different at the hospital versus the cuff. And I was like, I don't know. Yeah, I was like, mine is not working, so I don't know how to check myself at home. And it was really difficult. My husband, he's already a nervous wreck about all this anyway. So everyone was pushing me to get induced. And every time he heard the word induction, he was like, let's just do it. It worked for us the first time. Like, it worked with us at the last VWAC. Let's just do it. And every time they told me I was okay, I just was like, no, I'm going home. If I'm okay, I am going to have this baby naturally. And so it was a really emotional experience because we were all very back and forth and everyone felt like it felt like everyone was going through it with me, but I was the one pregnant and fighting to stay pregnant if my baby was okay. So it was really difficult, but I ended up getting through it and I had, and then I ended up having some prodermal labor at the end is what I felt like it was. And then I told my doula that I was almost 41 in a couple days was my next appointment. And I told everyone, my husband and my sister, I was like, he's just going to want to induce me and push it so much at my next appointment. And I was so worried. So I told my doula that I was thinking about trying castor oil, and she came over and she gave me electrolytes and she gave me a recipe with castor oil that was very, very small. I had gotten a few recipes and it was next to nothing. Like, there was no castor oil in it, basically. And she told me, it sounds like you're in early labor, so I'm going to have you try this. And I did one dose every 4 hours. And she was like, it sounds like you're in early labor, so I'm going to have you try this. And I honestly was kind of even grumpy about that. I was like, no, I want more. I want to actually, if I'm going to try this, I want to do something. And so I tried that at like 3:30 in the day on a Friday. And I did a couple doses. And then my mom called me and told me that she was in town and asked me if I wanted her to come over to hang out with my kids. And I was like, no, I had done 2 doses. And I was like, no, nothing's happening. I'm never going into labor. I was super grumpy. I was like, I'm never going into labor. So then I got a phone with her. I started crying because I was super emotional. And my husband told me to just go back in the room for a second. So I went back there and I don't know, I must have known in my head that something was going on because I called my mom right back and I was like, yeah, maybe come over. And she was like, okay. And so she ended up coming over and hanging out with us. And then we put the kids to sleep and I was feeling contractions, but everything that I had normally kind of felt through the week. So I just was like, I don't think a ton's happening. And then I ended up putting my little boy to sleep at like 8 o'clock and I had finished my doses of what I was doing. And at that point I was kind of breathing through them a little bit, but I kept telling everyone, I am not in labor. It's very, very early. It is not happening. And my mom was like, okay, that's fine. But why don't you just go back? You need to get some rest. Because if it is going to happen, you need to get some rest. So I told her, okay. So I went back to go get some rest. And I don't know why in my head I didn't realize that I had been able to rest through all the before in the week, but suddenly I could not lay in bed. But I just told my husband, no, it's really, really early if it's happening. So I just sat on my ball and I rocked around on my ball for a little bit. And then I was getting pretty uncomfortable, but I just didn't want to say it because I didn't want it to be fake. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go take a shower. And I can't stay in the shower for very long because I don't want it to slow things down if it is picking up. And so my husband asked me if he wanted, he was like, do you want me to come in there with you? And I said, no, it's early. I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to get clean. I'm going to come out and do some more on my ball and do standing dates. And he said, okay. So I went in the shower and I couldn't even really find a time. I probably got in the shower at like 9 o'clock. I couldn't find a time to like wash my body or wash my hair. And so I thought, you know what? Maybe this isn't as early as I thought. So I went back in the room and it was very relaxing. And I went to just go grab my phone. And my husband was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I think I should just time them. And he was like, okay, I'm coming in there with you. And I was like, okay. So he went in there and then he told me, yeah, they're pretty. I think at that point they were like 3 minutes apart. And he was like, they're pretty close. I think you're farther than you're thinking. And I was just like, no, this happened way too fast. You know, I was like, no, I'm going to keep being in the shower. So I stayed in the shower and I just relaxed in there. It was great to be in there. And then my sister came over at about 10:30. And at this point they were like a minute apart and my husband had called my doula and she told us to leave the house at like 11. She had given him an hour time frame. If it stays like this for an hour, you should leave at like 11:20 or something. So I was in the shower. My sister came over. I don't really remember her coming over. I was just breathing through everything. She said it was, she walked in and she was like, I felt like it was in the wrong house. It was very calm. I didn't know anyone was in labor. She was like, I just walked in and you were just breathing and you weren't talking. And I was like, and so my sister finally came in and she just told me, she told me at one point, you're doing it. You're laboring at home. This is what you wanted for this labor. And I just, that was the one time I remember her being there. And I looked at her and I was like, I am doing this. I'm laboring at home. I was so excited. And then everything was going really well. And I was able to breathe through everything. And my husband was getting the truck ready for us to leave. And then I heard a pop, a visceral pop. It was crazy. It sounded like a water balloon popping. And all my water broke. And my sister had just told me before this, probably two contractions before, she was like, sis, it's really, they're really, really close. Are you sure you don't want to leave right now? And I said, I told her, yeah, I don't feel like I'm getting a break, but she's not down. She's not engaged. I had no pressure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I know what that pressure feels like. I don't have the pressure. It's okay. And so then I felt a pop and my water broke. And then I felt all the pressure, absolutely all the pressure. And so I looked at her and that was the first time I had really made a sound. And I think I grunted or I moaned and I was like, okay, we need to leave. We need to leave right now. I felt like I could have her at that moment. I was like, yeah. Wow. So then I started to get out of the car I got out of the shower and I put some clothes on. I was still buttoning my like dress to even walk out of the door because I was like, if we don't leave right now, we will not make it. And so I actually asked my sister to get me a towel and she was like, why? She asked me later why I asked her to get me a towel. And I was like, I really didn't know if we were going to make it. So I needed something to wrap the baby in if we didn't. So then we left and we live like 5 minutes from the hospital. So we drove to the hospital and I had, by the grace of God, I had one contraction in the truck and I was laying down in the truck and I had one contraction and I really was able to hold it pretty well. Like it wasn't as intense as the contraction before. So that was nice. And then we got there and we parked and I started walking in and I had one contraction in the parking lot. And I just remember being by a dumpster and I actually got mad at that point. I was like, I will not have this baby in the parking lot by a dumpster.
By a dumpster.
I would have had this baby in the truck or in the hospital, but I'm not doing it by a dumpster. So I tried to just walk through that contraction because I was like, no, I won't have this baby here. So I told my husband, I just kept, he's kept telling me, I guess I was saying, she's here, she's here. And so I was just kind of holding, I was like holding myself, but we walked in and I got backwards on, the security guard brought over a wheelchair and I got backwards on my knees on the wheelchair and I was just sitting up. And then he pushed me through and I got to right outside the elevator and they were pressing the elevator doors. And then the elevator just was not coming. And I had one contraction and I was like, okay, here. I did not push. I think it was the fetal ejection reflex or I don't know what it was, but I did not push. My husband said I was just pushing the button and I just heard, he said, I heard, here's the head. Okay. Here's the shoulders. All right. She's here. She's here. And he was like, you were just talking us all through it. So I just felt her and I was like, all right, she's here. So I pulled her up and this poor security guard, he was pushing my wheelchair. So he just, then everything came out, everything. And so he just got, poor guy, he did not sign up for that.
Oh my gosh, yes. What a ride for him.
Yeah. And then we got into the elevator and my poor husband had to push. He had to have a family leave the elevator. He was like, sorry guys, but you got to get out. And so we got in and they ended up actually, the elevator I guess wasn't working, and so it took us down to the basement and then it went back up to the first floor and then back up to the second. And I was just holding my baby, I was just trying to make her cry a ton because she had cried a little bit, but she was really quiet and calm, and I was like, nope, scream, I want you to scream. So and then we got up to the floor finally, and then there was one nurse there and she was like, okay, she's here, her baby's here. And so we just ran back through and it ended up they being awesome. I got to deliver my baby and it was great because the doctors were super stressed about everything and about my VBAC and induction. And I felt like God was like, well, honey, you're going to worry about this so much and then you are going to deliver your baby.
You're
so
gonna do this. It'll be fine. Oh my goodness, what a shock, what a ride. I'm sure everybody around will never forget that day, ever. Right. Oh my word, congratulations on all three of your sweet babies that I have been able to see throughout the episode. Yes. That's so fun. And thank you so much for sharing your stories. Gosh, you went through a lot with switching and all the things and and then catching your own baby. Oh my gosh. Okay. So there is an article, essentially a small review that's called Risk Factors and Maternal Fetal Outcomes of Pregnancy Complicated by Preeclampsia Following Cesarean After a Trial of Vaginal Birth. So we're not going to dive too much into it. And it even at the bottom, it says that they acknowledge that this is not like a cohort study and therefore the evidence is not as strong as the randomized clinical trial, but the consistency of the data alongside evidence from the other published larger studies is reassuring. And it says they recommend a trial of labor for all pregnant with severe preeclampsia unless it is excluded for other indications. And so just right there, I mean, again, like I said, this right here is not as strong. They have some links in that. We're going to make sure that that's in the show note for you to go and read over. But again, like if you have preeclampsia, if your numbers are showing preeclamptic, like it is possible to have a VBAC. I encourage you to explore your options. And then I wanted to touch on Kristen's kind of comment of like, she brought her cuff in and it still wasn't, it was so different. So it really is something that a lot of people actually don't know. So I wanted to bring this up, but it's really important to get it checked and calibrated by like a professional lab or like someone who takes blood pressure, because often it can be wrong. So a lot of our preeclamptic moms are getting cuffs and then they're not calibrated. And so we're having like really high readings or really low readings. So then it's like opposite, right? It's just not matching up. So if you have a blood pressure cuff at home, and you're feeling like something's off and you're getting weird readings or it's not consistent with your hospital readings, like don't hesitate to go and get it calibrated because that can definitely definitely, definitely help. And it's supposed to be calibrated every 6 months. So if you get one for one pregnancy and then, you know, 2 years later or a year later or whenever you have your baby, you're using it again for whatever reason, know that it may need to be calibrated because it's been a while. So I just wanted to throw those in. And thank you once again for being here with us today. And congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.